Welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast, where you'll learn how to structure terms and use various creative financing strategies to create profitable deals for short and long-term wealth. Whether you're a buy and hold investor, wholesaler, or flipper, learning creative financing will help you do more deals and unlock profits that you may not even know existed. On the Creative Financing Podcast, we break down actual deals we and our guests are doing and simplify the methods and terms used to execute these strategies. Now, let's dive in and create some terms.
Hello and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Gallegos, here with
Jeff Rappaport.
And today we're going to do an overview of the five creative financing strategies that we discussed in previous episodes. So we wanted to just do a brief overview of those, kind of lay them all out on the line, because as we've been going through them, you know, I could see people getting confused or wondering, you know, what they all are. So we just wanted to spell it out for them. And that's what we're going to do today. Any opening words there, Jeff?
You know, one of the things that I was hoping to accomplish through this episode is just give people a better idea of, one, the different strategies they can use, and two, when they may want to use those strategies, because there may be different times that you would use different strategies.
Absolutely. I love that. Okay. Without further ado, go.
All right. So let's break this all down into some different things that you can kind of compare and contrast these strategies. So we're going to talk about lease options,
okay,
contract for deed,
okay,
all-inclusive trust deed, okay, or wraparound mortgage, whatever the case may be, subject to,
okay,
and a seller carryback.
All right.
Okay. And what we're going to do is we're going to compare them along several different things. So one, let's talk about some of the major issues that you are looking at when you're using creative financing. One would be, does it violate the due on sale clause? Another one would be, what are your remedies if there's a default? How long does it take to get your property back? Okay. And what process would you have to go through?
Okay.
Would it allow you to deal with FHA and VA underlying loans?
Okay.
And then the last one would be, is there a change in title? So who remains on title or who is on title?
Okay.
All right.
Cool. So lease option number one.
Lease option.
So title does not transfer, so there's no due on sale clause.
Correct.
And so the remedy is eviction.
Yes.
Right? If there is a default.
Yes, which can be, you know, as little as 30 days.
Yep, 30. And it's just, you know, a simple eviction process, however that's done in your state.
Right.
Okay.
FHA and VA underlying loans don't matter.
Yep, no. Exactly.
And there's no change in title. The owner stays on title. There's no ownership change on this. It's a straight rent with the option.
Okay. So now that we spelled that out, what is a lease option for those that don't know yet?
A lease option is very simple. It's two different documents, and it really gives – there's two different aspects to it. A straight lease or rent, just as in any other tenant landlord relationship.
Agreement. Yep.
With an option. And what an option means is that, hey, at some point in the future, you have the right – to purchase this property at a particular price with whatever terms are agreed upon. So a simple lease option would be, is I'm going to rent your property right now. I'm going to give you this much money every month, and I may or may not be responsible for some of the maintenance or the repairs. And in 2 or 3 years, I have the right to buy this property at said price.
Perfect. Perfect. And that does not have to be exercised, the option. Does not have to be exercised. I guess the only other thing we should say is that the landlord could sublease or lease it to you and allow you to sublease to another.
If you tenant. Set it up properly, yes, you could do that. So
if you wanted to stay in the middle, I guess.
Correct. Okay. Which would be a sandwich lease option.
Yeah.
That would allow
lease
you.
Option.
Correct.
Right.
So it would allow you some control. It's not, you have no ownership, but you have some control on who you're going to put into the property and what terms you're going to create.
Right. Love it. Cool. So Contract for deed.
Contract for deed.
Does title transfer?
So title does not transfer.
So is there an issue with due on sale clause?
Well, technically, it probably still violates the due on sale clause. It's a gray area.
Because there's an agreement to sell.
Correct. Okay. But for anyone to actually find out is almost impossible because, and you would certainly have a very strong argument if I'm buying your house, Jonathan, on contract for deed, and I now own it, but you're still on title. I mean,
yeah, I'm still on title. How can they say title is transferred?
So technically, it probably violates the due on sale clause, but it really eliminates a lot of the issues that would come along
right.
with it. Right,
yeah. Okay, and so it doesn't violate due on sale clause, so the next issue is remedy for default. What's the remedy for default on a contract for deed?
So, and this will vary depending on where you're at. So in Utah, we have a remedy called the forfeiture process, which basically allows you to go a judicial route and protest the contract for deed and literally get a forfeiture, which would mean that the buyer has forfeited
the contract.
Correct. And it can be done in as little as 30 days, which is a huge advantage for the seller.
Yeah, compared to actually going through the foreclosure process, which here in Utah, there's a minimum of 4 months.
Correct. Right.
Okay.
And the foreclosure is still a possibility, depending on how you set it up. So you always have that remedy. But the forfeiture process is considerably cheaper and quicker. So okay. You have those remedies at your disposal.
So that's the remedy for contract for deed.
Yes.
The title doesn't transfer. So can you do these with VA and FHA loans?
Again, this would go back to the title company that you use and the area that you're in. So in Utah, yes, we can wrap the FHA and VA loans using contract for deed. However, in Idaho, they are much less willing to do it. I'm not saying they haven't because we have done a couple, but much more difficult to get it done. Actually, contract for deed in general in Idaho, people don't love.
Okay. Is there maybe another term they use for it that
That's the term. Okay. And they've used it for years and years, but for some reason, they just don't like it.
So guys, in some states, this might be harder to do than others. Like Jeff just said, in Idaho, they don't like it.
And the actual forfeiture process, I wish I could give you a definitive answer in Idaho. I don't know if that actually exists in Idaho.
Okay.
In Utah, yes, it does. In other states, it may. But in Idaho, kind of iffy.
So that's something you probably want to check with a local attorney.
You may have to check. You don't want to just check with any attorney. A
real estate attorney?
Correct. At the very least, and preferably a real estate attorney that owns a title company would be preferable.
And that probably works with investors, right?
Correct.
Okay, cool. So we've spelled out all the things that you should be aware of. So what is a contract for deed? Briefly?
Contract for deed is a way to create owner financing with the seller where you're buying the property and the seller is going to finance a portion or all of a particular property. The real major difference is that the seller will stay on title. It's like buying a car.
Exactly. I was going to ask you to use that example because it's such a good one.
Yeah. You go to a car dealership, you pick out a car, you get financing for that car. You leave with that car, you own that car.
Yep.
However, you don't have title to that car until you pay off the bank. That is exactly how contract for deed works. You're not on title. You own the house. You can go sell the house. You can rent the house, but you don't get title until you pay off the seller.
Right. Okay. Perfect. Love it. All right. So the next one.
So all-inclusive trust deed or trust deed and note.
Okay. So does that violate due on sale clause.
Yes.
Because title transfers. Right.
Yes.
Okay.
It is also the most common way of doing owner financing. And depending on what area you are in, this may be a mortgage or a wraparound mortgage. They're basically the same thing, just
trustee
different instrument.
Here in Utah,
yes,
in other states could be a mortgage, a wraparound mortgage. And we've went into that in great detail in our previous episodes.
And here's the interesting part. So this is the most common. This is what all title companies understand. This is probably the most used strategy.
Most utilized strategy.
Right. All over the country. Common. Yet it violates the due on sale clause and creates an issue with, at least a potential issue with the bank.
Yeah. And with that said, VA and FHA loans, some title companies won't do it.
Correct. Actually, probably most.
So most title companies won't do it. So it does create an issue with if there's an underlying VA or FHA loan.
Yes. Based on some letter that came back in like 1998 or something stating that if you wrap these types of loans that we will, correct, we will take you and not allow you to close any more of these deals. Some title companies are totally worried about it, even though as far as anyone that I know, it's never happened. But, and I certainly don't know that it's at all in effect,
right.
But some title companies will not touch it. Others may. It again, becomes more of an area and a title company issue. But for the most part, I think you're going to run into problems trying to wrap FHA and VA loans.
Yeah. So you just really need to get the right title company on board. And preferably, again, a title company that works with investors because they're going to be more likely to do this if they understand how it's done and if they understand what the investor is trying to accomplish, right? So,
and sometimes that won't even help. So,
okay. So with that said, what's remedies for a default on a wrap?
Foreclosure.
Okay.
That is your remedy.
So foreclosure is the only remedy.
Yep.
Okay.
And then you'll, based on wherever you are, so in some states, foreclosure may only be 30 days. In Utah and Idaho, 4 months. It goes back to whatever the process is for foreclosure in your area.
Okay. So briefly then, what's a good description of a wraparound mortgage or all-inclusive trust deed?
So basically what it is that you're buying a property and you're creating a new note. So it's like getting a note from the bank, except the bank in this case is the seller.
Right.
And if there's underlying mortgages or trust deeds, you wrap around that or those. It doesn't matter if it's one, two, three.
You combine them to bring it all inclusive.
You're creating one new note.
Yeah.
Obviously, that one new note has to cover all the balances and payments of the underlying notes.
Right.
But
great point.
You're making the seller the bank for a portion of the property, and it may be the entire amount.
Beautiful. Love it. That's a great simplification of that. Okay. Let's move on to the next one.
Subject two.
Subject two. Okay. So does subject two violate due on sale clause?
Absolutely.
Yes, because title transfers, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Your remedies are none. Because you've given the deed and you got nothing as collateral back. So
so whatever you get up front on that deal is all you get.
I shouldn't say none. At least initially there is none. I guess there's always the possibility that the previous seller could go back and create some kind of lawsuit and the judge may actually rule with them. But
okay.
Up front, there is no remedy.
So maybe a lawsuit, but I mean even
there could be a lawsuit on any of these.
Yeah,
so.
And it doesn't guarantee that title would be transferred back to that seller.
No.
Okay. So no remedy because subject two means?
Subject two is basically you're deeding me the house.
Subject it doesn't, to the existing debt.
Correct. There is existing debt on it and you are taking over that existing debt. You're not assuming anything. You're not obligated. You are ethically, morally obligated to make these payments, but if you didn't, the person that got these loans is who's harmed.
Right, so, because the loan is still in their name.
That's right.
And it's still in place.
That's right.
Perfect. Okay.
You can, it wouldn't be wrapping FHA or VA, but you're just taking over, so it doesn't really matter what loan may or may not be in place. And so subject to, if you remember, we talked about, I love subject to, I've done a lot of them, but you got to be careful and you don't want to wholesale subject to deals.
Right, right. Great point. And we covered that in detail as well on the last few episodes.
Yes.
Okay, well, cool. So what's the last one?
So the last one is the seller carryback. And this one is probably the one that will be used the least. If you remember, we talked about it, that we use it for some houses, but it really is used a lot more for bigger type properties, commercial lands, multifamily, that kind of thing.
Yeah, mostly because a bigger down payment is required before you can get traditional or institutional financing.
It's just a lot more recognized in the I don't want to say more sophisticated, but the bigger, larger deals.
Yeah. 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 Okay. So what does it violate due on sale clause?
So no, because you're actually going to cash out any existing loans. So remember, this won't work that well if you've got to try to finance more than like 75-80% loan to value. So preferably it's better when there's small loan to value loans on the property or none.
Right.
But you've got to take care of any junior, when I say junior, first or second, anything that's on the property you have to get rid of.
Yeah.
So you can be in first position.
Okay, so no violation of due on sale clause, because whatever debt's there, you're just getting a new debt to replace that.
Correct.
Okay, so what's the remedy for default?
So the remedy for default is foreclosure. However, this is what you have to be aware of, is that now there's going to be two mortgages or trust deeds on the property.
Yeah, so one being the second position that the seller's taking.
Seller's equity in second position.
And then whatever primary loan you got on it.
That's correct. So if you were to default on the first, you could default on the first, you could default just on the second, or you could default on both. So as the seller would have to be foreclosing from second position, which would mean that they have to still deal with what's in first.
Right.
So I think this is where a lot of people say, well, why would anyone ever do this, that they're in a risky position? But really, what is the risk? I mean, if we borrowed $65,000 on a first, but all $65,000 went to you, Jonathan, the seller, you got all that money.
I got that money.
It's like taking out an equity line. You got all that money. You're not responsible for that payment. And you're getting a cash flow on the second trust deed and note, where you're receiving payments and a potential balloon somewhere in the future. So I guess I just don't really understand that there's this tremendous risk. It's basically like doing a refinance or getting a HELOC on the property.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
But you would have to foreclose from second position, which means that either you have to keep that first mortgage or trust deed current.
In place, yeah.
Or you would have to bring it current so that you could foreclose, and you're going to end up with the property with that first trust deed and note in place.
Yeah, but like you said, if you've given me that $65,000 already, then, you know,
are you any worse off than, I mean?
No, and you know, I guess the seller could do whatever they wanted with that money, but if, you know, if I just stuck that money in the bank and then you defaulted, I wanted to pay that loan off, I just, you know, pay the loan off with that $65,000 that you gave me. And then I own the property free and clear again.
Right.
And so I can go back and do another HELOC on it or refinance it and pull more money out, or I can do another seller carry back to another buyer.
Sure. And it really, the only risk, in my opinion, is what kind of loan was put on in first position.
Okay.
A hard money loan might be, you know, 12% interest. Conventional loan might be more in line with what people people would think. Private money may be anywhere, you know, lower, higher. It could be
anywhere in from 6 to 8 to 12.
It could be really anything. So,
okay. So, does this violate? Well, can you run up against an issue with the FHA or the VA?
No, because you're going to cash out all the underlying.
Okay. So, no issues debt with FHA or VA?
Yep.
Okay.
And it will change title. So
title does transfer.
Right? Yes.
Okay. So, what's a brief definition of seller carry back?
So this one's a little bit harder to give a brief description of.
Yeah, it is.
But what it would be is you are offering to buy a property and you are going to give the seller a larger down payment. And that down payment is going to come from you actually borrowing against the property. So you getting a first trust deed and note or mortgage on the property. It's got to be at least enough to cash out any existing debts that are already on it. That money will go to the seller, and then the seller, whatever equity is left for the seller, is now taken back as a second trust deed and note or mortgage.
Okay.
Yep. So now there will be two mortgages on the property, two trust deeds, and the seller will be secured in second position.
Yes. And then the first position will be whatever financing you used.
Yes.
To get the new loan.
Yes.
And that could be, again, a private money lender, hard money lender. It could be a traditional bank financing because there's enough equity there. So whatever that is. So that's that loan would be in first position. The seller is taking a note in second position.
Correct.
Cool. All right. Well, that covers that. I hope this is helpful for you guys because, again, these are, you know, this has just been a brief description of the five different strategies, creative financing strategies that you can use. And we covered whether or not you're going to come up with issues on the FHA and the VA loans, what the remedy is for default and due on sale clause. So any final words on that, Jeff? I think that was... that's kind of as short as I wanted it to be for a brief overview.
Really, and what we're trying to do is kind of lay a foundation so that you can kind of go back and listen to these episodes. We kind of did each one in a little more detail to start with. Now we wanted to kind of recap it and kind of compare and contrast them together. Yeah. And actually, in one of our next few episodes, we'll talk about why you would use one maybe over the other. And some things to consider.
Yeah. And this is helpful for me too, because I, when I hear, you know, a long definition of what something is, I kind of forget parts of it. So if I can hear that summary or that recap at the end, it kind of, you know, ties everything together for me anyway. So again, this is me on my journey, still trying to learn, what you know, Jeff, and how to use these different strategies. So. Any last words on that one? I think that one's a wrap.
That is a wrap. And we look forward to we're going to get into very, very basic calculator work next episode. That way, if you're truly new to this whole thing, I'm going to tell you real quick and easy how you can use your calculator to start helping you figure this out.
Perfect. All right. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, guys, for listening. Stay tuned for the next one, How to Use a Financial Calculator. See ya.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Financing Podcast. We need your feedback to continue to bring you the best strategies in creative financing. So please subscribe, rate, and review this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your ear, and please pass this on. Until next time, create some terms. This show offers general information on creative financing strategies and real estate investments. Nothing contained herein should be considered personal, legal, or financial advice. Every state has individual laws governing the use and type of documents used to execute strategies discussed herein. You should consult with a local licensed real estate broker and attorney before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, and opinions of the guests are their own. Profits are not guaranteed, and there's always inherent risk in real estate investing.